This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This Week in Wrestling, Indies and International. I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, man, what's going on, man?
Oh, doing good. I don't think we've been on since the Brave show got canceled. When I was supposed to go out and see that show in San Diego, which...
You got canceled?
Yeah, last minute canceled, which was a lot of fun. I was already all the way out there. I stopped what I was doing. I was having a good time at a... Oh, I wish I could remember it now, but there's an area in San Diego that has a bunch of breweries all within, like, walking distance of each other, about four or five of them. You can walk to all of them, and I was having a great time, and then I'm like, oh, I gotta head out to get to this show on time. I was running a little late, but, you know, it's indie wrestling. It never starts out on time. And by the time I got there, they say, the show's been canceled. And all the wrestlers were inside. I told the venue, I said, I'm going to go in and use the bathroom. I paid for a ticket. I can at least kind of, you know, take a piss here if I'm not going to get to watch some wrestling. So I walk in, and the Pope is up on the ring, and, you know, D'Angelo, De Niro, Elijah Burke, and he's explaining to all the guys, he's talking to them. And I don't even know if he's involved with the promotion or what, but he was just talking to all the wrestlers. And I couldn't hear what they were saying, but it was just very interesting. Eventually, they all leave, and the guy running the show says he's going to give refunds, and of course, nobody's gotten their money back still weeks later. So, very, very shitty. But the positive side of things is that Finest City Wrestling, also out of San Diego, FCW, they're running a show in July, and they said anybody who can show him proof of purchase for a ticket to the Brave show, he'll turn around and give you a free ticket to his next show. Really cool thing to do, really smart thing to do, honestly.
Really smart and really classy.
So turn around, I send him the email, I say, hey, this is what's up. He comes back and he's like, oh, you know what? Like, I know you only had one ticket because I was going out by myself. He says, how about I'll give you plus one. You're getting two free tickets to the show, blah, blah, blah. Come on down. And now that I know the drive to San Diego isn't as bad as it used to be, and I think I like San Diego more than I used to, I'm like, oh, this is going to be fun, and maybe make a weekend of it as we have some friends to stay out there with. So, you know, the guy from FCW, which is funny because it's Florida Championship Wrestling, Finest City Wrestling, he may have made himself a long-term fan from being so cool about this. So I want to give him praise and say, you know, not all the promoters are shitty. Some of these promoters are cool.
Has that ever happened to you? You show up at a better building and it's been canceled?
Not like this. Shows have been canceled beforehand, and they tell you, and they give you your money back usually, but never like this where we show up already there, building's already all booked, ring set up, everyone's there, and the guy's sending everybody back home, and he just openly said, because there wasn't enough people, the draw wasn't good enough. It's kind of fucked up, because you're sitting there going like, well, whose fault is that? You know, I'm here. This is your fault that there wasn't enough draw, and you're telling it to me like it's snowing or something. You know, you're trying to blame it on the weather. It was 100% your own damn fault.
And I mean, at that point, I mean, you're like, so you're not going to do a show? I mean, right there. I mean, obviously, that means he's not paying the talent.
No, exactly. That's some people were saying though. They said, well, what's the point if everybody's already there? I said, I guarantee he just told the people who he hadn't already paid. He said, I'm just not going to pay you. You know, and luckily, a lot of the guys there that I would assume would be the guys who didn't take a deposit or didn't get their money up front, most likely they also had other shows in the area. There was the FCW show the night before, so a lot of guys were on that show. A lot of guys were in Mexico within, like, you know, a few days before that show. So luckily, I think a lot of the guys that were there were probably, this was one last shot on a Sunday night before they were going to head home for the week.
Right.
After being on a West Coast loop. So it still sucks for them, but at least it isn't as bad as one guy I saw there, which was Sugar Dunkerton, wasn't on any kind of flyer, never promoted on their Twitter. He was just there. He wasn't on any other shows that weekend in the area, so they flew him all the way out to California to do nothing.
Jesus.
Yeah, so I felt kind of bad for him.
Any other big names on the card?
I mean, yeah, they had JTG, Shad Gaspar, Elijah Burke, like I said. Hernandez was going to, I didn't even see him. Hernandez was going to be there. And then like Shane Strickland, Desmond Xavier, Keith Lee, honestly, so many guys. And one of the bummer ones, but we'll get to talk about him next week. Terrell Temple. I wanted to see him live because I think the guy's definitely got a lot of charisma, but he didn't even get to have his match, which really sucks for a young guy like him who possibly, you know, thought he had his chance to get some exposure on the West Coast, and he doesn't even get a shot at it.
God, yeah, that's a lot of talent you just named. I mean, holy shit.
That's only part of it, too. There's still more. I mean, I'm not saying everybody that was on the card, but yeah.
God, I mean, I'd be pissed. I've never had that happen to me before. I've never gone to a show where it showed up and it was canceled. Good God, that's just... You know, and you want to know why people are all cranky in the wrestling business, and the boys don't trust anybody. I mean, fuck. They didn't even get any opportunity to sell gimmicks. I mean,
yeah, that was the one thing I saw Desmond Xavier, and he's
came outside the building and trying to sell stuff.
No, I saw him, and some girl had asked him to come out. I guess maybe tweeted to him or knew him, had his number. I don't know what the situation was there, but he came out to sign something and take a picture with her. And as he's walking back, I just go, "Hey, Dez, you got any shirts?" And he's like, "Yeah, I do actually." And I was like, "Do you mind selling one right now?" And he's like, "No, not at all." And he's explaining which ones he has. I said, "Yeah, just bring me that one. You know, tell him my size." He brings it out and sells it to me. But yeah, I'm like, all these guys, as soon as they told me the show was canceled, I would have been out there selling shirts, because at least, you know, you got some fans there, and you can make a couple bucks. But
yeah,
most of the guys just came out with their stuff packed up and just went straight to their cars and left. I was like, geez, you would think you'd want to recoup some money, but I guess at that point they were just kind of bummed out. But yeah.
I mean, some of them, I'm sure if they were driving, they're like, yeah, I'm going to get the fuck on the road. But I mean, some of them were probably flyouts, right? Like, I'm sure Keith Lee was a flyout.
Oh, yeah.
And so he's got to wait for his goddamn. I wonder if I wonder if they had him booked for a hotel that night, or if he was flying out that night. If he's booked for a hotel, I have a funny feeling that hotel was not going to be paid for.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, geez, when's your flight? Where are you going? What are you doing? And in that setting, it's like, I mean, the thing was, there was a lot of Texas guys. There was the shows, as I said, in Mexico and San Diego the night before. So Keith Lee might have been in a car with four or five other guys. So they may have just been, let's drive, you know?
Yeah, that's
I wouldn't be surprised if that's what it was, but you would think the guys...
I have a feeling he's getting flyouts nowadays, though.
I would say in most settings, but in this one where, like I said, there was a lot of Texas guys who you don't see coming out to California, he might have been in a car with some of his boys, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Wow.
But yeah, I do know that Keith Lee is getting flown to a lot of other places, and he's, as I've heard on another podcast, Gabe is seeing him as the, 2007 Samoa Joe, so.
Yeah.
He's kind of he's the hot thing right now.
Yeah, he is, and we'll probably talk about it in a few weeks, because June's almost up. I think we'll end up doing, our top 10 wrestlers of the year so far in ring, and top 5 tag teams eventually by probably the end of the month, and I have a feeling Keith Lee will be on my list. I don't know about you, but because the guy's just been gangbusters this year. But hey, let's get over to CWF Mid-Atlantic, and we open up with a Dirty Daddy versus Ethan Sharp match. And you know what, I thought this was solid stuff. I thought I like Daddy's hot opening, and I loved Sharp kicking out the knee to set up the heat. Really smart work. Sharp, and then he sees Ethan Sharp working the jaw, which you don't see very much. They make a Mighty Igor reference. Do you know anything about Mighty Igor?
No, I don't know what... I don't get the
reference. They made a reference about him in Masked Superstar, which is a very famous angle from the Carolinas. Mighty Igor was kind of like Norman the Lunatic. He was like a simpleton, special needs guy who had like a little bone or a little thing on his warrant, but he was like, you know, slow. And Mighty Igor, and to get heat, Mass Superstar put a cigar out in his eye, and that was how they started their feud. So it was a big famous feud in the Carolinas that actually drew a lot of money and stuff. So I think it's a kind of cool little thing they mentioned here. I always love when the you really hear it on CWF. You don't hear it in a lot of places, but I always, because I'm pretty fluent with the history of the Carolinas, and because it was one of my favorite territories, and I always love it when they throw these little references that I get. And I overall thought this was a fun little bout, and then as it ends, I love Sharp heckling the old lady, telling her to stand up, and she's refusing, getting real angry at him. I thought this was a dandy of a little match. What about you?
Yeah, I wrote in my notes off of this match, just like, I think that these two could wrestle each other 1,000 times, and it'll always be solid and have some interesting stuff to it, because they really sell passion and emotion, and then, yeah, the little lighthearted comedy and character stuff. So, like, it just works. Yeah. Like, every time. It's not blow away. This isn't 5-star, 6-star, 8-star, whatever you want matchup. But it's always really good. And it always...
And entertaining.
Yeah, and it makes sense. And it gets the job done for what storyline and angle you're building through. I mean, they can ebb and flow. They can, you know, Dirty Daddy can get the win. Ethan Sharp can get the win. They go back and forth. Neither guy loses credibility or standings in a loss. Like, it's just great stuff, and I love, you know, Ethan Sharp gets the win with the tights, so just playing into the heel side of things. And so, yeah, just these guys just work so well together, I think, that that their matches just can't be bad, honestly. They're always entertaining.
Exactly. And then when that leads us to KL3 versus Movie Maker, what you make of this thing?
This was almost, not the opposite, but this was like the other side of things. These guys were trying a lot more to show off their athletic spots. They knew each other well enough that they can hit the spots, but as I talked about, the emotion, the passion in the match, it just didn't feel like it was there. They throw in some gimmicky stuff with the Batman mask, and there's a nice looking forearm from KL3 towards the finish that I really liked, but realistically, I mean, this was like the opposite end of the spectrum when it comes to that. This was a lot of really hard work, but you're getting a lot less emotion, a lot less drama out of it.
Yeah, they might have done more in the match, but they got less out of it, you know. It was totally felt like green vibe from these guys. They're working hard, and the potential's there, but they're not even close to being there yet, you know. What'd you say?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, both guys definitely showed it, and as I said, they seem like they have to be familiar with each other, because they were able to hit their spots together really well. Like with just like athletic, complicated indie spots, but that didn't necessarily translate to very great wrestling match.
Yeah, and it wasn't like they were sloppy, but they were awkward in a way too, you know. It just wasn't smooth. It's like, you know, it almost like they were trying hard, and they, what they were doing, they were hitting it, but it just wasn't fluid like how. Like they weren't natural workers, if that's the sense, you know, kind of like Sharp and Daddy in a way.
Yeah, and it's examples of stuff that may be just a little bit too much, even for a wrestling match setting. That they're trying to go above and beyond their pay, you know, they're working above their pay grade in some ways with some of the moves that they're going for.
Yeah, and the Batman mask was just plump stupid. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, could have done without that.
Yeah, the Dawson's promo, I thought was a super effective promo. And got the job done, you know? You don't need to be super dynamic on the stick. You just, at times, I mean, your top guys are the ones who are dynamic on the stick or effective, like your Ric Flairs and your Dusty Rhodes or your Rock or your Steve Austins. But then there's the other coin where it's like you're not, I mean, I thought this was just effective. It got the point across. And sometimes that's all you need, you know? And I thought it was perfect for their character too, no nonsense bruiser of a tag team. What would you make of it?
Yeah, in some ways, I mean, it's not dissimilar to a guy who I think I've heard bandied about quite a bit lately, as well as a underrated promo guy is Arn Anderson. I mean, he's not that flashy promo that everyone remembers, but he was damn good, and obviously better than the Dawsons. But, like, the believability factor is what it's about. It's not about the catchiest lines. and the spark and the fire that's going to stay with you forever, like some of those Ric Flair lines that are just, you know, iconic. But it's, oh, this guy, these are badasses. These are fighters. And these are fighters talking about fighting. You know, and it's, you just buy into it. And that's what this Dawson's promo was. I bought into it. Super believable. Super effective. I mean, exactly the same as you said. And I think that they just, they know their roles and they play their roles almost to a T.
Yeah, and Arn Anderson is one of my top 10 promo guys. I always loved him. My only complaint sometimes is he promised a violence that he couldn't possibly achieve sometimes. And that's a, but that's, you know, but if it gets him in the building, it gets him in the building. Right. This leads us to Kane Justice versus Rick Converse. On paper, I thought this was interesting. I thought this would be a great learning thing for Kane to be working with a veteran like Converse, who's pretty decorated in the CWF area, has a lot of cachet in the CWF area, and he's really the type of opponent who can help him grow. I don't think they have natural chemistry together. It wasn't that they were bad together. It's just, you know, Converse is, it seems like, you know, he's a lot, seemed a lot taller. It was just some of the dynamics just didn't click for me, but I still enjoyed the match. I think the most important is what can Kane learn from working Rick Converse, and it's important for young guys to work with veterans. I like Kane talking trash to the crowd, which is a sign of a great worker. As in, sometimes it's a lot harder than doing a moonsault, is being able to talk trash to the crowd and get a response. And here Kane is doing it, and it's just a sign of how far ahead he is of the curve when it comes to working a crowd. I like Kane on the bike early because it makes sense, because Converse is the veteran who has all the accolades in CWF Mid-Atlantic. Kane's the cocky heel who kind of knows he's outmatched at this point, so he's going to be on the bike and trying to win Converse out. I like that. I liked when Converse gets some momentum, Kane then takes another powder. And you know what? Again, I think that's a sign of a great worker, because a lot of guys nowadays would be terrified to take a powder and try to get heat by just walking and stalling. And I think it takes a special breed to have enough confidence in your work that it stands out on its own to go take a powder. And I mean, it's an old school trick, and man, it still works. I mean, he was getting heat by taking these powders. Converse ends up chasing him down, and he's owning Kane on the floor. Nice ankle pick by Kane, and he starts working the leg. I like that. Loving the punches to the knee, just really, really fun and smart work. That's the thing about Kane. The guy, it makes sense in his matches, you know, like he punches the knee, working the knee. You know, this guy's a bigger guy, so it makes sense for him to kind of try to chop the tree down. It was kind of like I had that issue with his match where, yeah, he went to work in the arm, but instead of, who was that that big African-American guy he wrestled a couple months back, do you remember? Who ended up getting hurt for the tag tournament.
Sorry, was it Montana Black? Is that the one you're
talking
about?
That's it, yeah. And I felt Kane should have been chopping him down. And I like that. Now, a couple months later, he's putting those type of pieces together. And like, yeah, I really should be chopping down the taller wrestler and trying to take his legs out from under him. I enjoyed that. I liked, you know, Converse would get back in control, but then Kane would get the cut off and would go back to working the leg. I mean, so it was just really smart work on Kane's part. I love Kane starting his own Kane chant. I enjoyed that. I thought it was a nice piece of business with Cecil and Kane at the finish, which sets, you know, goes for what their feud is, which is what the main thing right here. The Converse match was kind of like a side item to the bigger picture, which is Kane Justice versus Rick Converse, versus Cecil Miller, which will be coming up pretty soon. I enjoyed this match a lot. I gave it 2 3/4. You know, it was Converse took a lot of the match because, again, he should, because he's the veteran. He's the established on the pecking order, high, much higher, and so he took a lot of the match. But the parts of the match I really liked was when Kane would work the leg or take the powder, just all those little things. He just stands out. He's always finds stuff interesting and engaging when you're watching him work, and I'm really impressed because he's so young at this stage of the game, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he did such a great job here, and I'm not gonna belabor the point because I think you hit everything there. But I was same as you, thought it was an interesting matchup on paper just to see how Kane works with someone who doesn't necessarily fit the roles of everyone that he's been wrestling. And I think he did a good job cutting the guy down, as you said. Working the legs was a really nice change of pace for him that made a lot of sense in the context, and it definitely shows his growth as a character. And the finish itself did a fantastic job of, while yes, you know, Rick Converse should be getting the win, he's kind of a protected character in CWF and isn't going to just do jobs to anybody. It also didn't hurt Kane because of the chicanery and having Cecil Scott actually get involved when he was just going to take a powder and take the count-out loss instead of getting pinned. Instead, he gets actually pinned and thrown back in. So I liked everything about it.
Did I call him Cecil Miller earlier?
I think that's his name.
Okay, you just called him Cecil Scott.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And I get mixed up. I forget which one I'm supposed to call him and which one I'm not supposed to call him. So I try not to say his last name.
Okay, makes sense. All right. sometimes I feel like we're blowing Kane's blowing Kane too much sometimes on the show, because he's such a young worker, and I think it's both of us. We're both pretty much love watching the guy work, you know.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's crazy to think, but I think the guy ends up in my top 50 for 2017 pretty easily for being such a young rookie. So it's not insane to talk so much about him, but at the same time, I mean, after the hyperbole that some people were propagating over the past year about Matt Riddle, I think we're okay if me and you show a little love to Kane Justice here. We're not putting every one of his matches above 4 stars like some people did for Riddle last year. Because I'm right there with you. I think this is easily 2¾ star. I think the kid shows a lot of talent, but he's not necessarily, you know, having match of the year contenders every time out.
No, exactly. And what's even more interesting is right now, I don't know if he's gone out and traveled yet. And this is just what he's learning in the dojo and learning from working CWF, working really good talents at CWF, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah, I'm really excited for his future. Really am. What do you think of Roy Wilkins and Snooty Fox?
Roy Wilkins, Snooty Fox, I thought that they did a really good job all around in this match with kind of keeping or making Snooty look like a world beater, selling his power and his ability to kind of really take it to Wilkins. Well, Wilkins has to kind of is playing on the back foot. I like once Roy's in control, he's kind of got the kind of evil side of him coming out, working over Snooty with these big nasty knees into his side as he's crawling on the mat. And I think that, yeah, just really accentuated the positives of Snooty Fox. Roy Wilkins really made him look just so fucking great here that it was like super impressive for a guy who is really still kind of learning. And I mean, Snooty Fox has a lot of holes in his game still. And I think that it really goes to show just the caliber of Wilkins here to make him look so good. I mean, realistically, the kind of shenanigans towards the end and the hoopla really, you know, that's kind of the CWF special, which is, you know, what they do here. And it works really well to get a lot of heat and get the crowd into everything. Enjoyed the match restart and everything, because it's kind of plausible for the heels now to complain that they don't have to pay the bounty because the match got restarted. It's a different match. It's not the same thing. So I just love kind of stuff like that and old school heel logic. So, all in all, it worked for me, and I like the finish at the end. Crowd sent home happy with the big win for Snooty Fox off the power slam. Are they calling it the Fox Catcher power slam for Snooty Fox? Did you notice that?
They might have. I can't say for sure.
Okay, but I think if they are calling that, it's kind of a cool name for the move. I think Fox Catcher, kind of, I like it for the power slam move. It's kind of a weird reference to that everything that happened with that wrestling team.
But
at the same time, I think a lot of people don't really, I guess that movie came out just recently, so people might get it, but either way, I think it still works for me. But all in all, I like this match. What'd you think?
I enjoyed it. One, I love the $1,000 challenge. loved it. It upped the stakes here. So I enjoyed it. I thought Snooty was over huge in this audience. They loved him. I liked. I thought there was a lot of good stuff here. I thought Fox, when he opened up, I thought it was good right off the bat. And Wilkins cutting him off, and Wilkins showing Fox. Early on, Fox were at the back, but then Wilkins really showed him, hey, Rook, this is how you really work a back, and he's doing it. And we get to see Snooty sell, which he does really well, because I think he understands the dynamics real well, and he understands the aspect of selling, and he's selling it really well. I liked the coach cheating this for Wilkins to get the heat also some more. Overall, just really fun stuff, and a match you can really sink your teeth into, and the audience made it feel like they were watching a big time match, wouldn't you say?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, the audience really helped this match a lot.
Yeah, and made it seem come across as big time. Overall, I mean, I thought it was another really enjoyable CWF experience, wouldn't you say?
For sure. I mean, this is like the advertisement for wanting to go. I'm really getting like amped up and wanting to go to a CWF show so bad now. And episodes like this are the ones where it just seems like it's so much fucking fun that I'd want to go so bad.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I am. I think I'm going to be out there in October. So let's keep those fingers crossed for me. Why don't we take a break here? And when we come back, we'll talk some NXT. How's about that?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation, Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we're back, and we're going to look at some NXT. And we open up with Heavy Machinery versus Andrews and Sullivan. What you make of this, man?
This was... go ahead.
Maybe it's Andrews. Is it Andrews? Or was it
Victor Andrews, I think.
Andrews? Okay. All
yeah.
Right.
And the last fucking thing we need in wrestling is another Andrews, right? There's right. So many of them already at this point. I think this guy's just a jobber here. I thought that Lars Sullivan looked better than he did last time we saw him, but I'm still concerned with I think he's a little bit too old to just be getting started.
Yeah.
He looks fine here. He wasn't favoring his knee as bad as he has before, but he's still got that big gnarly brace on there. I loved him and Tucker Knight kind of just smashing into each other for a little bit, but Lars, I don't know, I think in some ways it's like it's really tough because it feels like Heavy Machinery should just be kind of dumb lumps of just big, fat, dumb idiots who smash into things, but then also at the same time it's like Lars comes across like a like a monster that you keep locked up in a cage. So I don't necessarily want him outsmarting the heavy machinery guys. It's just, it's a weird setup. And then obviously, you know, they're just playing up a story with Andrews begging to get tagged in. He just gets viciously murdered. And that's, I think, where the heavy machinery right now look the best. And weirdly, it's like similar to when the Authors of Pain were just starting out, that I don't really want to see them in anything other than this, because they looked really good when they were just in control of Victor. I love their spots where they're throwing the guy around back and forth in the bear hug. I think that they work that really, really well, and they make it look excruciating and impressive. And then their moves where they're, you know, they kind of do the hero sandwich that the Sandwich Squad does, which is, you know, whatever, they can take that spot if they want. And their finisher being kind of like a double team big splash is pretty cool. But yeah, all in all, I think to put over the angle of Sullivan kind of picking bad partners and getting beat, I don't think Heavy Machinery is the team to be working that with, just because...
Exactly, because right now, with DIY, you know, breaking up, they need to get another tag team ready for Authors of Pain, and obviously Heavy Machinery is one of the choices, right?
Yeah, and everything that they're doing right now should be focused on getting them over and not worrying about other little storylines that you're also working on.
Yep, and they came across as also Rans in this angle, because the last thing you remember is a Sullivan kicking the crap out of Andrews, right?
Exactly. So yeah, I think that hurt. As I said, their offense looked good, but it's just, this felt like you were trying to serve too many masters at the same time, and you should have just either split this up into two separate matches with different teams, or just focused on one or the other more, because it didn't really help both to just kind of intermix the two angles.
Yeah, they're going to do that. They're doing this angle. Maybe they need to look over at, I hate to say it, go look on their damn, on their service, and look how they did this with Cactus Jack back in the day, because this is identical to what Cactus Jack was doing it, except it was a little bit more interesting, because it was, you know, Cactus Jack, Mick Foley ends up becoming an incredible, you know, superstar, so it's nice to see him at the early point of his career, but they didn't do it at the expense of getting their new team over. They didn't do it against their new babyface tag team, you know, and they did it against another team, where it was a squash match, but then Foley would go destroy his partner, but it wasn't at the expense of trying to get another new act over. They were using other acts who had been doing it already, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. And it's like, so, this is the setting where you have a jobber team, because when the jobber team that's like very clearly jobbers get the victory over him because of his shitty partner, it makes even more sense why he's upset, because it's a team that he feels like they should have easily beaten. It's like in this match, you're supposed to think that Heavy Machinery is a top flight, you know, opponent. So why is Lars so upset that his tag team partner couldn't beat them? It's like, they're a good team. It should be a tough fight for him. So it just doesn't make quite as much sense.
Exactly. I think on paper, the angle, I think it seems like a good idea to him, but the execution of how they're presenting the angle just isn't clicking, and it's just downright dumb, right?
Right. Well, where do you... Okay, and here's the thing. Where do you come down on, like, what I was talking about there with Heavy Machinery? Like, I totally see Dozovic as kind of being dumb muscle guy, but, like, should they protect Tucker Knight more as the brains of the operation, or can they just both be kind of dumb?
I think they both can be kind of dumb, but you kind of... I don't know. It's just a weird dynamic. It's weird. I'm not 100% sold on Heavy Machinery. I think the name is cheesy as hell. So I got to wait a little bit more. Right now I'm not getting a great vibe off them yet. I love their squash from a few weeks back that we reviewed. I got to see them in a real match, you know, before I get a vibe for them and see how they can work. But maybe I'm not a big fan of having two dumb wrestlers, so I really do. I think you're right. I mean, I think they do need to protect, you know, definitely give each of them a character, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. That's what I'm kind of thinking. Like, you could be kind of a dull jock, but I don't want to see the monster outsmarting the guy on the team that should be at least the brains of Heavy Machinery. you know.
That makes sense. And it never works. I think you always should have two different identities. So I don't think Dumb Jock should be both their characters, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And then we get a Sanity interview. You know, typical Sanity stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's what they've been doing. It's fine. It's not really. I don't know if it's a big time money stable, honestly, with the way that they're going about it.
It is to me. They're like an act where I don't know. Yeah, I mean, maybe I don't want to. It kind of feel like Dungeon of Doom in WCW, where they were just a crappy gimmick for WCW, where you had like Sullivan and Max Muscle and Braun, the Leprechaun, and the Loch Ness, and yeah, Kamala and Zodiac. They just all feel like jobbers, and that's what Sanity feels like, jobbers to me. With Eric Young, who's polished, but he's not a great promo. At best, he's going to be effective, but they give him so much mic time. You'd think he'd be one of the best talkers in the company, which isn't the case. You know?
Yeah, I was high on Eric Young, honestly, on the mic for a long time, but even I think that, like, he doesn't shine in heel roles, and he never has. It even kind of showed in TNA over the years when they had him doing his World Elite stable. I don't think it ever worked. He's really kind of best as a guy, like kind underdog. Of a lovable rednecky character that people get behind. That's where he works.
Yeah, the underdog, where, you know, the heels can get a lot of heat on him. Yeah, so being the head of a heel stable just doesn't work at all for him. I'm with you on that. Which leads us to a Roddy Strong interview, which was starting out really well. But you can tell still this is not Roddy's strength doing these type of things. And then Rude comes out and interrupts. And Rude is a dynamic, is great, great presentation to him. He's a good, really good promo. He's real polished. And I thought this was effective in getting the crowd really behind Roddy, because Rude was a complete asshole, and you got even more sympathy on Roddy, which is a great thing for a babyface who's going to be fighting underneath. I thought Rude made this. It's just like, you know, these guys they've had, you know, Samoa Joe I thought was really good in his role carrying promos. I thought Rude has been very good in carrying the promos. Kevin Owens was another guy who could carry the promo section against guys like Finn, who was not a great promo, but he had a ton of charisma. Same with Nakamura. And here, it's Bobby Roode is again carrying it as the standard bearer. He's the world champion of NXT, and he's carrying himself as like an old school NWA champion, and it's effective, and he's effective in that role. Well, what do you think about the whole entire presentation and some of my talking points?
I feel like you might be reading off of my notes, because I had like the same thing. I think Roddy just can't do a good boy promo. It's just not his thing. He starts it out fine, like you said, because he comes out of the gate all kind of probably hyped up and ready to go. And then the second it starts to kind of turn and he needs to rest on, again, being that believable character, as we were talking about earlier, it's just not natural for Roddy. He's just not he's not a good boy. He's a kind of a bro-y jerk, and that works for him. He can be endearing. He can be slightly lovable. But, I mean, I also heard him in the Reseda zone in Southern California think that it was okay to call somebody a faggot. So, I mean, he's not necessarily a super nice dude, like, in real life.
He's not a white meek baby face.
No, he's not. So it's kind of tough for that. But when Rude comes out, I mean, yeah, it's night and day. Bobby Roode comes across like a star. Sure, I'm hearing the people kind of say, oh, it's too much like a Ric Flair knockoff. I'm like, you know, Ric Flair didn't invent the promo. Ric Flair was reminiscent of other guys as well. It's kind of like you have to accept that this is how it works. Guys seem similar because these are the patterns of speaking that work as a promo. And so, I mean, he comes across super believable. His lines are great. I mean, what does he say? You're a acceptably attractive fiance.
Yeah.
And your kid that's okay looking, or your kid that's kind of normal. I mean, Jesus Christ. It's just, it's great stuff. And Bobby Roode really becomes engaging and really gets me excited for the program going further.
Exactly. You know, Roode, people want to complain about him, but I mean, the guy's an effective promo, and he's a good worker. Is he? I don't think he's a great worker, but I think he's a very good worker who has pretty solid psychology. I think sometimes his opening of his matches can be better, be more engaging into it. I have no problem with his finishes, and he understands the most important part of the match is the ending, because that's what people are going to go home and remember. But man, yeah, I think people really, you got to look at his psychology, and psychology is really well good, and people should realize there's more. Again, I mean, when you're the world champion, it's more about storytelling and drama than than the flippy do stuff. I hate to get into the Rip Rogers versus the indie circuit argument, but when you're a top guy, it's sometimes that you're asked to do different things, and you got to have different skill set to be a top guy than being a great in-ring worker.
I was going to say one more thing. As you talked about that, it really kind of was something I was going to say, and then it made me think, oh, you know, I might as well just mention it. That, like, he may not have, he doesn't have the best matches. I don't think he can have the match that Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate had, but, I mean, very few people can. And also, like, very few people can consistently deliver a solid WWE, not even WWE, but a big match main event style. And that's what Bobby Roode can do. Like, he can deliver a match that every time feels like a big main event match that's worth having the title be on the line. And that's real. I think that's more important than people realize. I mean, the best high flyers on the planet can have really cutting edge, awesome, dynamic spot matches, but at the end of it, they don't feel like the championship should have been on the line, and that's the most important match that was on the card. It could be the best match, it could be the most entertaining match, but it doesn't feel like it was the most important match.
Yep, that's a very good point. And then we get this Nikki Cross segment, and I mean, I think it's just probably the segment was perfect for her, wouldn't you say?
Yep, fantastic stuff, and really helping that character. And again, I mean, she's the star of this whole Sanity thing. Yeah. It's crazy.
She's by far the most important. Feels like the most important cog of that Sanity gruesome. Then we get a Paul Ellering, and he's kind of doing this Authors of Pain video package challenge in a way, where it looks like he's offering a challenge, and he's going through all the teams that could possibly accept that challenge. Right now, it's pretty weak groupings they have, you know? Doesn't look like they... I mean, it's Heavy Machinery, but there's just a lot of Ossarans in there, you know?
Yeah, a lot of just guys. Not a lot of, big-time believable threats to the division.
Yeah, when Heavy Machinery is your number one option, and I have no problem with that, but they feel like an act that's going to take some time to get it super over, but I think they'll get there. I wish they had another option to go right, you know, breaking off Authors of Pain. I felt they should have had another tag team ready to go than trying to get Heavy Machinery over so quickly, where they seem like an act that they can get over, but it's going to take time to get it over organically, you know?
Yeah, they're a team that I think you have to kind of build for the fans to, like, kind of fall in love with.
Yeah. Then we got Sarah Logan and Peyton Royce. What'd you make of that thing?
Royce looked better here than she has. Sarah bumped really well to help kind of give her more believability. Sarah Logan, you know, Crazy Mary Dobson from the Indies, her offense looks really sniff and really believable, so I think that helped too to make Royce look more believable, because she's in there with someone who everything looks sturdy and good. But I mean, this is an interesting way to, I guess, re-debut Mary Dobson as Sarah Logan now, and I guess she's officially signed, I don't even know. Again, I think Royce looked good, but this felt like filler.
Oh yeah, total filler. And then we see Cian Almas. He's with some girls, not even really pretty girls, just some random girls. Yeah, I mean, I guess he doesn't necessarily have to be pretty, and it really doesn't matter. But he ends up getting slapped in the face by who was that anyway? I'm drawing a blank on the name. Mercedes Martinez. Sarah Stock.
I thought I heard that it was what's her name? Thea Trinidad.
That's it.
Austin Aries' girlfriend.
Yep, that's exactly who it was. So she looks like she'll be getting into a character. And you were complaining how they're not showing the party, and I could have done without this, I don't think, but I don't know. Does it have legs, him upsetting, pissing a girl off? I don't know. I don't know if it's something I want to get invested in. I was invested in his character a month or two ago, and now it's kind of falling off the rails. What about you?
Yeah, this is too much now. I mean, they're going the opposite. I know I said I want to see more to this, but they're taking it now down a weird way. I mean, I'm hearing...
I mean, but how phony is it? They're out partying, and it's daylight. I mean...
Right, and it's supposed to be just partying all night, man.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be one thing if it was first thing in the morning and they did a shot. Okay, he's out just crawling back in, but this is middle of the afternoon. I mean, it was the middle of the afternoon in the video. It was definitely before 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't know, just poor. Well, I'm sorry, go on now.
No, I mean, not much to it. This isn't the way that I want this story to go. I don't know what it's supposed to be, what it's going to be with this girl. If she's going to be a spurned lover or someone from the past who's disappointed in him now or whatever it is. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, that weird smile at the end after he gets slapped. Weird.
Yeah, if this is going to be like he comes back and he's getting serious, then it's like, well, that's a babyface story and you just switched him heel from babyface that didn't work. So it's just, how does the story go? Like, none of this is really working for me at all, and I feel so bad for the fucking guy, because he's actually really good. Like, they're just... I don't know how they messed this up so bad, but... Sometimes it's just... It's hit and miss with WWE. Sometimes they just don't click, and they don't get it.
And it also doesn't help that they're, like... They're doing the throwing shit at the wall and hoping something sticks. Because, what is it, a couple of months ago, he was the bully?
Yeah. He was picking fights and stuff, yeah.
Now he's a party animal... I mean, it's just like, come on, give him a gimmick. Let him try to get over it. I liked his gimmick of being a skeezball heel who's cocky. And I thought that worked for him, but obviously the company didn't. Maybe because he was too effective of a heel that they just don't like having that. I don't know. I just have no idea what's going on here. And then we got a Tommy Rizzoni Lorcan. What would you make of this?
Good back and forth, really nice super believable looking strikes. Tommy taking just nasty chops, and then he just picks up Oni, and I love Oni firing back up. Looks like just a fucking madman. The viciousness of Hideo coming out, doing multiple GTSs, I think is a good way to kind of put over the heel character. And, I think that this... In some ways, this worked for kind of telling the story that I was talking about last week, that they needed to tell about what the fuck is the deal with Ono just taking shit from Hideo here as he comes out to stop him, and he gets shoved again, and then now it's just enough is enough, and he shoves Hideo straight down to the floor, and looks like it's gonna be off to the races for what could be a very good feud for both guys if we're kind of focusing on just getting Hideo over by doing a big match with Chris Hero or with Cassius Ohno here. The match itself, as I said, I mean, if you want to help put over a guy as being just aggressive and violent, I think Oni Lorcan has proven to be the guy that could go in there and throw the big wood and just fucking beat the shit out of each other to make a guy look like he's a real badass. So that's super impressive as he goes from doing it with Drew... McIntyre, and then he turns around and does a very similar thing here with Hideo.
Yeah, for sure. I'm with you on everything you said there. This thing was hard hitting and stiff as hell. Then we get an Ember Moon interview, and it's like, okay, great. You know, well, any added thoughts there?
No, not really. Yeah, nothing. Not much to it.
Yeah. And then we get No Way Jose versus Killian Dane. I felt this was kind of a train wreck. I felt that they didn't have a full-fledged leader in the match, and the match hurt and it struggled because of that case. Well, what about you? What do you think?
That hurt, and the crowd hurt this match. I mean, they're too busy chanting Fuzzy Wuzzy and talking about Killian Dane's back hair, and it made me stop and think about fucking Jason Albert's back when he was trying to get over in WWE. I mean, at least that was the Attitude Era, where the guy, you know, had to go all the way to Japan to have anyone take him seriously just because his back has some hair on it. And I'm just like, God, if you can told the crowd at Full Sail, oh, you guys are acting just like the Attitude Era crowd, I bet they get so fucking offended. No, we care about wrestling now. No, we don't. We love women wrestlers. We wouldn't want to just see them in bra and panties. But you turn around and at their core, it's the same shit. Oh, that guy's got a hairy back. Let's talk about it forever. Like, fucking hell. But yeah, the match really suffered from neither guy really seemingly being the general of the match. And even with producers in the back putting the stuff together, I think you still need someone in the match to really have an understanding of the story and not see it as just spots on a page. And that's really what it came across here. I think they're both a little bit too green to be in there together just working that way. What's fucked up is Killian Dane is not even that green. I mean, he's wrestling for a while, but I think we both always kind of said it. He really comes across as a guy who's got a good amount of the tools, but has no clue how to use them. And he hasn't really, even in this time in NXT, he hasn't really improved in that side of things at all.
Yeah, I'm with you. 100% on that. And that's an episode of NXT. Some good, some bad, some ugly. You know, not everything can be a home run, but I thought this was, I mean, I thought it was solid, but they definitely have some work to do, you know, going forward. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, there's some stuff that's promising. There's some stuff that's confusing. And there's some stuff that's downright good. So, I mean, it's a mix, and we'll see where they go forward from here.
Exactly. On this note, we'll take a break. And when we come back, we'll be talking progresses. Strong, super strong style tournament. Be right back.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA on-demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey and Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apuitas podcast, the Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
And we're back. We're looking at Progress Night 1. And we open up with Jeff Cobb with Nathan Cruz. Man, you knew this is going to be a tough one because Cruz is just not a great worker. Good, solid promo. He's a good heel, but he just lacks the in-between-the-ropes type of aspect to him. And I thought they had a good, solid 2.5-star match. I like Cobb using his strength and his wrestling, and Cruz using dirty tactics was pretty much the story of the match. But you know what? Cruz is not a dynamic character. He's just a good, solid heel. And that's what it felt like, a good, solid match. 2.5 stars. What do you think?
I liked it a little bit more than you, I guess. I gave it 3-star. I thought that Cruz working as just like a shitty heel, 100%, I really enjoyed. I love Cobb hitting his super impressive spots, and the crowd being really into Cobb helped the match a lot for me. And I think that some of Cruz's kind of built-in, I guess, protected and kind of just his history and progress made it so some of his shitty near falls like off of cheating, actually put it in doubt and made it work, which I was really impressive, because going into the tournament, I you know, I had picked Cobb to win this match, but they were able to pull some stuff that actually made me question, so I think that they did a good job there. Cruz, I mean, as you talk about not being very good between the ropes, it also equates to, like, as a heel, he doesn't put any shine on himself, which I appreciate, and he bumps big for Cobb in this match pretty much the whole way through. So to me, I thought it was a little bit better than you, I guess, there. I thought it was a weird opener, but it really delivered, I think, for setting the tone for what a tournament like this is all about.
Fair enough. What do you think of Flash Morgan Webster versus Mars Haskins?
I liked the opening with a lot of kind of quick back and forth, and Webster kind of showing a little bit more on the mat stuff. I think that he's really, you know, using that guillotine now. He's trying to show a little bit more depth to his game. He's not necessarily impressing me just yet in any way. Webster is still a guy who I love his podcast. Seems like a super nice guy, but his matches really, really... don't connect with me. He doesn't connect with me in ring very regularly, so it's kind of tough. I don't think I really had any doubt throughout the match. I liked that it went really quick. Didn't really have a chance to overstay its welcome. Never really dragged or anything, but again, I never really bought in super strong, which is pretty fucking tough to happen in a match with Mark Haskins, who I think is in, you know, my top list of wrestlers this year. I mean, this match just didn't really do much for me. I gave it 2 3/4 stars. I think everything in it was good. It was quick. It's hard to complain about it, but it really didn't have that extra little bit that really caught my attention.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think more than you. I gave it 3.5 stars. I enjoyed the mat work to start. I like Haskins working the leg, and I thought Webster was good selling underneath in the face and peril role. I liked Flash Morgan Webster gets this nice little flurry, then a couple dives from both early on in the shines. Haskin cuts him off with a flip over Fujiwara, which I thought was awesome. Flash Morgan Webster with a guillotine. So I'm enjoying that I'm enjoying some of these submissions. Rolling Death Valley Driver was pretty hot. Then super kick to the neck by Haskins, which is a really nice combination. I thought they worked well, they connected well, and had a really just a blast of a match. What do you think of Jimmy Havoc versus Travis Banks?
I enjoyed this quite a bit. I think that it did a really good job to help set Travis Banks up going forward. I really like that, you know, there's a lot of details in here, and that's what Progress is all about, is kind of little sports entertainment details. They love that stuff where it's like Banks looks for the handshake after the grappling and Havoc just gives him the finger, and then Jimmy's like on the floor trying to get Banks to come at him, but Banks outsmarts him. So you're showing off that, you know, Travis Banks is just this all-arounder. It's like he can outsmart the smart brawly guy who uses his brain more than his wrestling ability a lot of times. I mean, that was kind of Havoc's whole thing, is the ultimate opportunist, and also he's like now this overpowered, like super unbeatable monster, even as a babyface. So it did a lot to really help put over Banks, I think. I love Banks. I mean, he really takes everything and just keeps firing back. It's all heart, ruthlessness, and skill. It's like, as I said, it's like this is a good way to set up Banks going forward through the tournament, which, you know, I'll just say, not really spoiler alert, but I'll just put it out there and say, like, I predicted him to win the match or the whole tournament. So I knew that, like, this match was going to be really important in setting up that story. And even at the end, Havoc won't shake his hand, but he does, you know, raise his hand and kind of shows that that he earned Havoc's respect by the end of it. And I gave it 3.25 star and thought it was the great groundwork for the rest of Travis's story through the tournament.
Yeah, I liked it too. I gave it 3 stars. I liked Havoc showing off some of his mat work, which we don't get to see a lot. Banks tosses Havoc into the crowd. The girl's reaction to the chair throwing was great from the crowd, the girl in the crowd. I thought the crowd was hot for this match. I thought it was good, good, tight, action-packed match. 3 stars. Then we get Zack Sabre Jr. and David Starr. I absolutely love this match. I give it 4.25 stars. I love Zach destroying the arm and Star selling the arm. I love we got this like armlar into a lung blower variation by Star, which was incredible. Star's selling makes all of Zack Sabre Jr.'s offense mean something. Really good stuff. Star starts focusing on the neck of Zack Sabre Jr., and I thought the finish was pretty nasty overall. Well, what'd you make of it?
Very similar to you, but a little bit lower on it. I gave it 3.5. I think from the opening, they did a good job of making it feel like a dream match. And I liked Star looking for striking instead of playing up his amateur background that he's been doing a lot more in this match. And then I loved commentary picking up on that, mentioning kind of the comparison of Zack Sabre Jr. versus Ciampa to Zack Sabre Jr. versus Star here, as Ciampa and Star really in this setting are being treated very similarly. I really love that Star, I could do without the "who wants to see some high flying wrestling" to set it up, but he goes for the look at it, and you know that just completely pisses off Zack Sabre Jr. I assume, especially because he's vegan, he doesn't want someone putting sausage so close to his mouth. That really fires him up. And from there, I mean, the double pump handle arm breakers just look nasty when he hits both arms back to back. Star rallies with the problem with Star sometimes to me, though, is he hits like a lot of moves in a row that feel like tributes to indie stars of yesteryear, as he goes from like move to move that were all guys that were really popular in PWG before they got signed in WWE back to back. And then it goes into the final finish with a Sabre kind of showing off his escapism and his different styles there. I like the big kick to the head to set up the finish. And like I said, I liked it a lot, but I don't know. I guess I just didn't like it as much as you.
Fair enough. Then we got Zach Gibson versus Jack Sexsmith. What'd you make of this one?
So, before the match starts, and fucking, it really kind of drives me up a wall that Jim Smallman feels the need to constantly do this, especially before Zach Sexsmith matches, where it's this, "we're all welcome here, in progress, we're open to everything," and all this to psych up the crowd, and it feels so fucking forced and phony. And like, I totally know that, you know, Jim Smallman's probably a really nice guy, probably super supportive to LGBTQ issues, totally loves Jack Sexsmith, everybody does, but it feels either like disingenuous, "hey, hooray for us because we're okay with gay people," or on the flip side, it feels like very much like, "hey, crowd, don't do anything stupid. This guy, we all know that he's like a gay character, but don't chant anything dumb. Let's be on our best behavior." And both of them just feel, I don't know, kind of phony, and it kind of annoys me. Before the match, obviously Gibson gets nuclear heat trying to do his promo. Love that. Love Gibson jumping Sexsmith before the bell. Breaking him down in the corner, brawling around. I love that at this point there hasn't been a lot of crowd brawling except for a little bit with Havoc, but having the match before this stay completely in the ring, and then you turn around and this match is kind of wild brawling all over the floor, especially because it plays off their history with the countout win with Gibson, I think is great. Lots of really nice-looking arm work from Gibson, obviously. He's bullying the fuck out of Jack Sexsmith. Just grabbing, holding the wrist clutch as he throws forearm after forearm. Sexsmith is able to pepper in hope spots with big moves like exploders and stuff like that that I just think look great. The crowd's popping huge for everything. They're super behind him. His selling keeps the crowd very engaged in him the whole way through. I love Sexsmith coming close over and over again, looking for front face socks, but he can't. He almost never gets the caco. He never does it, and then he just throws it to the ground. So I'm super happy that they got rid of it because, yeah, I'm just kind of sick and tired of the condom thing. So hopefully this can be officially getting rid of it. Love Gibson teasing the count-out victory again with the Helter Skelter on the floor. Weird standing double stomp from Sexsmith. I don't know what the fuck that was supposed to be, where Sexsmith kind of ends up almost standing on his feet as he falls down to the, or standing on Gibson's shoulders as they both crash to the mat. That was a really weird spot, but as Sexsmith is able to get the win, the way that Gibson sells it is just fucking livid. The anger is just pouring off of his face. And he goes to look for another attack on Sexsmith, who steals the win there. I give this 3¾ star. I think both guys fit the roles perfectly. The crowd was super game for the match, hot the whole way through. Nice teases to the history between the two. Great looking work. And I think Sexsmith is actually becoming a really great underdog babyface. I mean, he may not be the best technical wrestler on the planet, but I mean, he's really putting together some fiery comebacks that work well for him.
Yeah, I'm with you. I liked it even more than you. I give it 4¼. I thought this was tremendous work, and I was curious if they were going to evolve Sexsmith's character here. We get Sexsmith attacks the arm early. Gibson turns the tide and is beating his ass now. Gibson destroys the arm into the post. Gibson is great in the bully role. I enjoyed the comeback by Sexsmith, but it gets cut off. Slice bread number two by Sexsmith. Another cut off with an attack on the arm. Gibson selling the neck really well. Sexsmith is selling the arm. Mr. Kako is a great I think it's an undercard gimmick where it just doesn't scream like a top of the top card of the guy. So if he's going to evolve further, I think Mr. Kako thing needs to go away. But we'll see. It needs to be it really needs to be evaluated, and that gimmick needs to be built on the drama real well. And here, Mr. Kako is just an undercard garbage stuff, and we got great near falls from all opponents. What'd you make of this? You're on the next one. We got Tyler Bate versus William Ever. Do we really need to talk about this? It was kind of a squash.
No, it was... the crowd was the biggest negative factor on this match. They are too fucking full of themselves. They're chanting about Jesus stuff too much.
Yeah.
And there was a point... I mean, they obviously really like Tyler Bate, and they want to cheer him and love him the whole way through. And there was a point where I just got so fucking mad, where you could hear that it was like a high-pitched women and children cheer for Tyler Bate. And then it got just rousely booed down by the guys. They're just that deep bellowing boo. And I'm just like, oh, you guys were totally fine with cheering for Tyler Bate just a moment ago, but the second that it seemed like the women in the crowd were having a good time and they were excited about him, you just had to shit on it. And it makes me think of a certain kind of wrestling fan who's a total gatekeeper against female fans and acts like a complete dick. So that just kind of drives me crazy. And Tyler Bate's character throughout the tournament, I think, really affected his matches negatively. And this was the first match where it happened, but it continued to happen. I gave the match 2¼. I don't think it was very good. What was your rating?
I didn't even rate it. I just gave it a check mark.
Okay.
Because I thought it was just a squash. We'll say I enjoyed the pose off. I thought it was the best part of the match. which is sad when you're doing a god complex thing and Tyler Bate doing the mustache rolling. Then we got Mark Andrews versus Lamita. Oh, man. I was kind of disappointed in this. On paper, you know, it seems like a really good high-fly match, but it just never clicked for me. I gave it 2.5 stars. I thought there were some fast reversals early on, some fun spots, but babyface matches are hard to make, I thought they had a problem. I really did. It just didn't click overall. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. 2.5. Thought that there was some great high-flying action, but, I mean, Mandrews is obviously very best underdog selling. And when you have a debuting babyface high-flyer versus high-flyer match like this, it is tough because you don't really know Flamita. You don't know what to expect from Flamita, and you don't really have anything to play off of in this match to make you kind of invest in it. So it really does kind of make it hard for me to check in. This is why I complain a lot of times when they do the high flyer versus high flyer dream match things, because a lot of times I don't think it works.
You always need a base, yeah.
Yeah. Know.
And I don't think either one of these guys are bases.
No, so in this setting, I think it just goes to show why I always kind of question this style of booking.
I totally agree with you. And then we got super fun Riddle versus Trent Seven. I got to say, Trent Seven's promo about being a what's it about being with Brock, a coworker of Brock, I thought was fantastic. And I like seeing Riddle. It was a fun finish to see Riddle destroy him so quickly, and it adds intrigue to the tournament. What about you? What you think?
I mean, Trent Seven chat shit and he got banged. That's it.
Yep, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was great.
Easy thumbs up for night one. Wouldn't you say?
Oh, for sure. Night one was probably. I mean. If it wasn't for some of the great stuff that happens on night three, but there's also a lot of filler, I would say that night one is like easily the best night of the tournament.
I think I like night one. It was my favorite night, to tell you the truth. I thought it was more consistent.
Yeah, for sure. That's kind of what I mean. It's like there's a few really good things on night three that can maybe make a case for night three, but if you're just looking at the overall show, night one was like easily the best night.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you. Then we go to night two, and we open up with the Riots versus Andrew and Webster. When we get a square off with the Riots and Andrews and Morgan Webster, I just want to say piss off. I mean, it's just that's so dumb. The two beefy brawlers are having a square off with Webster and Andrews, which makes zero freaking sense. I didn't think they had a really good match. I didn't think their chemistry was there. It wasn't terrible, but it just wasn't worthy. Well, what about you? What do you think?
Yeah, pretty much right there with you on everything. I think if I'm going to pick a kind of a star, silver lining of the match, it's obviously Mandrew's underdog selling is always great, especially against the two big bullies. But and maybe this plays into a possible heel turn for the Riots. It has been a long time since they've been heels. It doesn't feel like it just because they were heels for so long and so memorable as heels. So this could be kind of setting up into a heel turn, but realistically, I mean, I didn't write a star rating for this. I didn't much care for it. And I think I'm right on page with you.
Oh, cool. And then we get Mark Haskins versus Tyler Bate. What'd you make of this?
This has big fight feel. Haskins has that killer instinct. But again, it's Bate has, I think, to me, it came across like felt like he was entitled to win the tournament. And it came across like he wasn't really trying. And he had this aloof attitude the whole way through. I've heard other people take it as being that he was kind of in between, wanting to kind of play to the crowd and get cheered and still be part of British Strong Style and be a dick. So it kind of was making stuff not work for me. When he's doing, when Bate's on top and he's controlling, working the leg, he does turn it up somewhat. And I think that kind of worked for me, but it also, his dismissive attitude towards Haskins kind of seems like it might catch him as Haskins is able to take lead and really turn up the pace and dominate for a moment, but gets caught off again. Bate again, really, as you've talked about, kind of squashy. This it kind of a little bit more competitive here, but it almost again feels like it just, I think what they were trying to do was set up a feeling of inevitability that Bate was going to win so that it would feel more like an underdog scenario going into the finals. But for me, I think it just, the story affected the match's quality so much. But I give this 2¾ star. I thought it wasn't bad, but it wasn't as good as these guys, I think, could have.
That's how I am. I give it 3 stars. I thought there was some fun grappling early on and some hard strikes. But I mean, we see Bate going after the leg, and Haskins returns the favor with a low-level drop kick and starts working the leg. Hard kicks by Haskins. Fun counts. And it's, fun counters. And I thought we got a great finish to put heat on British Strong Style, but it wasn't like a blowaway match. About 3 stars. That leads us to Zack Sabre Jr. and versus Jack Sexsmith. Really was pretty much a storyline bout. You know, would you say?
Yeah, but I think that they brought a good amount of emotion to it still.
Okay, well, then to go into detail, tell us how.
Just kind of the way that Zach really felt tormented at times about what he was going to have to do as Jack wasn't just going to kind of just take it and roll down and give up. I think really worked in kind of keeping Zach face, but putting a lot of sympathy on Jack here. In some ways, the finish really kind of, it delivered as an angle. I think that in a tournament where they're having a lot of this, it kind of probably wasn't the best bet to do so much of it. I mean, the 6-second match, the stuff with Tyler Bate, I think adding in more kind of gimmicky stuff may have not been the best bet. But I think this, on its own, really kind of tugged at the heartstrings. There was some dumb shit, like him trying to climb the top rope with one arm and falling down and getting kicked and all that really did kind of hurt it. I thought that the finishing submission itself looked really, really bad, like super painful, and really believable that he would have to give it up there. I give it like 2.5 stars. I don't think it was like amazing, but I think that it definitely worked in some ways, and in other ways it may have not been the best decision to put this in a tournament that already had, like I said, had so much kind of going on.
Yeah, I don't mind it, because it helps establish and push through the story, but if you start doing it to it too often, then it becomes kind of a boring trope in a way. Which leads us into Jeff Cobb versus Matt Riddle. I was blown away by this. Gave 4.5 stars. I loved it. It was really cool watching them roll around on the floor. Riddle shooting for submissions. Cobb's gut wrench suplex was just freaking nuts. Cobb is lighting up Riddle with suplexes. Riddle's facials emoting pain were great. Riddle is in shock that Cobb kicked out at the sixes. Just amazing. And then Cobb cuts him off. The pop-up German suplex was nuts. Just a great epic battle from between the two guys, and they just, you know, have really strong matches every time out. What'd you make of it?
You didn't even mention what he did right before the pop-up German, as Cobb hit a Canadian destroyer on Matt Riddle.
That's right.
What the fuck was that?
Big moves.
Yeah, this was fantastic. These guys are the two big jocks. They're this great bully. I think they're like a babyface bully jock tag team in PWG. But then they turn around and show that they can dish it out to each other just like they dish it out to everybody else, which I just love. Just the tombstone from Riddle, just amazing. Looks like he's just completely dead afterwards. The facials, the selling, the big moves, the realistic nature of their grappling just because of the two shooters. The post-match, I mean, again, as I say, the guys just come across like brothers in war. You know, they totally get each other. And it comes across in their matches as a team and against each other. I gave it 3.25, a little bit lower than you, but I thought just phenomenal stuff from these guys.
Exactly. And that leads us into Travis Banks versus Flamita. And what you make of this?
This was weird for me that, like, there was kind of a heat segment from Flamita on Banks. It just makes me question, like, that they think that they have to have Banks always be the underdog and always get sympathy on him. I think in this match, really, Banks should have been came across a lot more dominant. And have the high flyer use his speed and power, but Banks just continuously ground him. But it's just, I guess they just kind of want to go for that same story over and over again. Banks kicking out of pretty much everything he can. Good back and forth here. A bit overkill. I mean, there's no way to kind of argue against the idea that Banks is a kind of an overkill machine. He's the kind of guy that does like three or four moves in the span of time that other wrestlers will do maybe one move. He's just go, go, go. But, I mean, he really makes it work. He stops, he sells, he registers everything. He gets a lot of sympathy from the crowd. And it gets over huge, so it's not bad. I think that some people think when you say something like that, it means that they're just like the worst worker on the planet. But I think he looked good here. He locks in, gets the submission, so they're working to put over his submission hold. I gave it 3.25 star. I thought it was an interesting kind of styles clash. But I think, if it was up to me, I think the dynamic of the match would have been a lot different.
I'm with you. I gave it 3.25. I thought it was action packed. We got big moves, and I love the finish. So a good, strong, good, solid match. That's the thing, though. Banks hasn't had any. For the guy who's going to win the tournament, so far he hasn't had any of that incredible match yet, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure.
And it's weird. I mean, Andrews went out this year. I thought he was the glue last year. I mean, not including Chris Hero in the tournament last year. And Andrews, they eliminated right off the bat this year, huh?
Yeah, which was kind of interesting. I mean, there was some stuff with them on podcasts and talking and stuff, and it feels like they really are like priding themselves in, oh, you know, there's only three guys in it this year that were in it last year. And, oh, you know, 90% of the people in the tournament this year weren't even in the company from the start and all this and that. And it's like, I feel like they were intentionally really trying to push like this is going to be totally different, instead of like really worrying about like, this is going to be really good. And I think that this match probably should have been Travis Banks versus Mandrews. And they should have had Flamita in, you know, some clusterfuck tag match on the second night, you know, instead of having Flamita go over Andrews for who knows what reason.
Exactly. Do you want to cover the tag match?
Not really. I mean, it was fine. 3.5. What'd you
give it? I gave it 2.5. So okay. There we go. And the girls' match, though, I thought was really good. I gave it 3.75. I thought Toni Storm looked really good. I thought Storm suplexes really stood out here. What were your thoughts on the match?
What's funny is I gave it 3.5, but I was like super disappointed. Okay. I expected a lot more from them. I think it would have been much better as a singles match. And I think they went out of their way to put Toni Storm over just because she was the one that probably everyone didn't expect to win. Which kind of just irked me in some ways. I think they would have been better off going with either of the other two girls based off their history with each other and their history in the company. I think the match had a lot of bad three-way tropes where, you know, someone's out on the powder sitting on the floor a lot. I think there was some spots that botched. There was, you know, some stuff that looked good, some stuff that looked awkward, some stuff that looked a little weak and fake. And I thought that all in all, it was just... as I said, it was disappointing, even though I still gave it 3.5 stars, just because, I mean, this is the main event. It's been pushed for a long time. Progress makes such a big deal about their women's division, and it felt like it just didn't deliver at the level that I was hoping it would. That being said, it's still a very good match. All the girls looked very strong. Like you said, Toni Storm's suplexes looked great. Ginny kept her character work looking good, and I think Laura DiMatteo actually looked better here doing her kind of MMA-inspired gimmick than she has in other situations, but she didn't really get a lot of chance to shine in this match because of the nature of it being a three-way.
Yeah. What'd you make of the... We open up on the next, again, another strong night, would you say, though?
Yeah, night two was definitely strong, but very clearly weaker than night one for me.
Yeah. And then we go to night three, and we open up with that six-man scramble. I don't need to talk about it, do you?
No. Wasteman Challenge was fun, but the match felt tacked on and pointless.
Yeah. And then we open up with Zack Sabre Jr. versus Travis Banks. What did you make of this?
This was, I mean, for me, I almost would say that this was the weakest of these guys' three matches, not counting their What Culture match. I think, with that said, still, again, 3.75 star. So that just shows you how much I thought of their other matches, both of which in Fight Club Pro. I think that from the start, I mean, it feels like a fucking fight. I mean, they shake hands, but this is just, these two guys are going to just kick the shit out of each other. I love Sabre all over the neck, with just really nasty looking work. Banks selling, I mean, just looks like he's being fucking murdered. I love that it plays into Sabre is kind of like a legendary figure on the UK scene at this point, so him being so dominant really works. Love Banks muscling out of the guillotine, thought that it looked good. Looks for the kind of one-armed fisherman buster kind of deadlift out of the guillotine. And the crowd is really, really strongly behind Banks at this point, and the selling and the sympathy to these built up really works. I love Zaxman using this flying triangle. It kind of looks like a Hurricane Rana variant that he's been doing a lot, and I think that it works really well as kind of an out of nowhere get into that move. I love the striking between these two is great. They're just really going at each other. Zach going for 3 PKs in a row, and the third one gets caught. And the look on Banks' face is just fucking intense as he hits 2 Slice of Heaven in a row, the second of which gets caught with into the triangle by Zach, but Banks is able to stomp in his head and find a way to power out and hit the big third and final Slice of Heaven, which I just thought was great to put over all the different styles that Banks can put a guy away with. Again, I mean, bit overkill. Why does he need to do 3 of that move? Why does he need to do 3 PKs? Why does it need to be so much? But in this setting, I mean, it's supposed to be a big fucking deal, big fucking match, so it kind of works. But I think you could build to the one time and make it bigger. And I think that's why their matches in Fight Club felt better for me, because they were toned down a bit more. And they weren't as over the top as this one was.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. I enjoyed it. I gave it 3 3/4. Again, Zach, mixing striking with mat work. Zach Sabre Jr. multiple times tries to choke him out. Zach Sabre Jr. Going after Banks' neck now. Banks' back and lift was also really neat. Overall, really fun match between two guys. And I think Banks really needed to have a good match here at this point. Which leads us to Travis Pate versus Matt Riddle, which I gave 4 stars, and I really enjoyed this. I liked the mat work was really good. I thought we got big strikes. I enjoyed Pate working the leg. I really enjoyed the big moves combined with the story here for a 4-star match. What do you think of it?
I give it 3 3/4, and I'm right there with you on pretty much everything. I love the kind of grittiness. I loved them almost knocking each other out with the forearms, but you show that Riddle is left standing as Bate hits the floor, just showing that little bit. I think Bate doing the cyclone kill is interesting, and definitely good stuff. I love playing off the knockout knees and all the kind of shenanigans again to help Bate get the victory once again. After he hits the 2 big dives and is able to take the victory here.
Yeah, I skipped the women's match. Did you watch it?
I did watch it. I gave it 2 3/4 star. It was kind of a bad Kaylee Ray match, which is slightly impressive. Katie Harvey did not look great here.
Fair enough. And I did not watch Haskins. No, I watched. What do you think of Haskins for Strength 7?
3 stars. It was fine, but I think the gimmicky stuff with Jimmy Havoc and all that didn't really hurt the match, but made it very clear that the match was an afterthought.
Yeah, I'm with you. And then that leads us to Jeff Cobb versus Pete Dunne. I enjoyed this match. Dunne, sneak attack, which suits his character really well. Cobb comes back with suplexes. Dunne after the arm. Cobb just destroying him with suplex variations after variations. Super fun match. 3.5 star where these two, where Cobb gets to whip the shit out of little Pete Dunne. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, right there with you. I gave it 4 stars. I thought that the psychology was phenomenal. I thought that the dickish heelishness from underneath from Pete Dunne was very impressive as he's cheating and picking apart where he can, but also showing some of his legitimacy and being able to stand toe-to-toe with Cobb at times for moments. Not for very long, obviously, as Cobb is just so much more powerful, so skilled and so fast also, which is just insane. So yeah, I like the outsmarting, doing everything he can to kind of cheat to be able to get the win. I mean, everything throughout the match, and then finally at the end, giving a somewhat clean finish for Pete Dunne after the shenanigans throughout the whole match. I thought this worked really well.
Yeah, but that leads us to Banks versus Bate for the title. What'd you make of it, man?
TB versus TB. I gave it 3.25. I thought that it really built off of everything that happened in the tournament super well. Again, I mean, they went fucking crazy. But this is the match to do it in. So I could almost argue that some of the other matches didn't need to go as insane. But this match was really the time to do it. I thought that the shenanigans with the British Strong Style and CCK, while I think will hurt this match standing the test of time as an all-time classic for the finals of a big-time tournament, I think that chicanery and like that doesn't age well. I think in the moment here it worked really well, though, and I think that it added a lot of kind of drama to the match, as you just can't know what's going on when you start getting so many people involved. The back and forth was insane. The big moves that they're both breaking out that they don't normally do. Both guys have amazing facials that really suck you into the match to the point of believing everything that's going on. And yeah, I thought that there's a lot of great stuff. One thing that I kind of hate is that there's like the trope now that avalanche versions of your finisher, like big super off the top rope versions of finishers, like never seem to win matches anymore. And I used to like when that would be broken out as a kill shot that finishes it, especially in this setting where, I mean, he hit that avalanche Kiwi Crusher just to get the kick out, just to go into his submission and get the submission right there, when I'm kind of like, you could have just gotten the pin off of that. That would have been enough. But as I said, I still think that this really felt like a culmination of a long storyline with Travis Banks. Felt like the crowd really gets that cathartic feeling that they finally can be behind him as the top guy, as he goes forward and constantly, even, I mean, Travis Banks has an amazing character and an amazing way of carrying himself, where even after this match, even after this long tournament, he can still feel like an underdog marching into going for the championship, which is kind of impressive.
Yeah, I'm with you. I enjoyed it again. I gave it 4 stars. I thought it was good, solid wrestling early on, and big storyline match for the finish, and with Banks' partners coming out and Tyler Bates' partners coming out, and it just had a lot of shenanigans, but it all made sense, and it was a great piece of business for a 4-star match. Well, again, another good solid last night. I'd have first night clearly the first one.
Yeah, I'd say first night clearly is the best. But, I mean, as I said, there's some great stuff on the third night that really stands out. The first night is the most solid up-and-down card.
And overall, for 3 nights, I thought they did a great job with the tournament, wouldn't you say?
Yes and no. I think that they did, but I also think that they didn't need to stretch to 3 nights. I think that 3 nights was kind of a gimmicky move that they obviously did because they could get away with getting an extra payday out of it. But there was a lot of filler. On night 2 and 3, I think there was a lot of stuff that you could have gone without. I think your opening shows with 6-man scrambles, that doesn't feel like necessary matches because it's a tournament to give guys time off in between matches. That feels like, you know, as I said, just filler. So I think over the 3 nights, there was a lot of really good wrestling, but I do think that they could have compacted it to 2 nights and had very similar, just as good show.
Exactly. Anything you want to plug, buddy?
No, just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead. Check out the podcast over on PWO or the PTB and Pop feed. And other than that, no, that's it.
Yeah, I'm with you. Follow me on Twitter at TidyZo Wrestling. Have a great week. Watch some wrestling. We'll be back next week. Catch you later.
Yeah, keep it 100. check said I keep it 100. Fuck my boss, texting my incumbent. Keep it 100. Write another one, I stay blunted. Text 10 dimes, yeah, I kept it 100. You know another night's coming. Yeah, I keep it 100.
Keep it 100.